Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Cesar Romero.
Hello, and welcome to the Ivy Podcast, the podcast for leaders, innovators, and entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Cesar Romero, and today we're going to talk about how to make community your competitive advantage. Our guest today is David Spinks. He's the co-founder of CMX, where over 20,000 community professionals gather to learn and support each other. And he's also the host of CMX Summit, the largest conference in the community industry. In 2019, CMX was acquired by Bevy, where Spinks now serves as the VP of Community, helping companies launch and scale event-driven community programs. David has personally advised and trained hundreds of organizations in community industry, including Facebook, Waze, Salesforce, Airbnb, Google, and more. In today's episode, we're going to dive deeper into David's journey to becoming a community professional and how following his genuine interest and curiosity in community led him to career growth. We're also going to be talking about understanding and measuring the value of community for a business and much, much more. Thank you so much for tuning in, and let's dive into the show. David, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. This is an episode that I've been wanting to record for a long time, and this is perfect timing because you have a new book that just launched, The Business
of
Belonging, which is right here with me, next to me.
Nice. Looks good. I got mine too.
And I'm excited to dive deeper with you into your personal story, right? But also into community, right? Especially how we can make that the unfair advantage for business, right? So before we dive deeper, I want to set the context for the audience. So just give us a quick background into where you are now professionally, right? Like what you're doing right now, and then we'll take it back in time.
Yeah. Yeah, so now I'm the VP of Community at Bevy. Bevy is a software that powers community events for lots of great companies. And Bevy acquired CMX in 2019, which I co-founded back in 2014. And CMX is the community for community professionals. We want to advance the community industry and give community professionals everything they need to be really successful at building community for their business. And so CMX was acquired by Bevy. So we're now one team. I'm leading community for our team, and just published the Business of Belonging, which is a book I've wanted to write for a very, very long time, and have been working on it pretty actively for the last few years, and it's finally out. So that's where I'm at today.
I love it. And let's take it back to, or I guess I should say, when was the time that you decided that community was going to be your thing? Right? What was that aha moment for you where you decided, you know what, this is going to be my professional career? Let's dive into that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't find community. Community found me. No, I got the experience of building an online community at a really young age because I talk about this story in the book. I was very into video games in middle school and got very into Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4 and ended up launching a community, a forum with a couple friends that we started a clan together and ended up having one of the largest communities forums for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4. And so I was 14 at the time, and we were running contests and moderating and engaging people and creating, you know, a whole online community, the work that a lot of community builders do today. And so ever since then, I've kind of been fascinated by technology and how it could connect us, and became an early adopter of social media tools when they came out, whether it was Facebook, MySpace, or Twitter eventually. I went to school for business as a business administration major, and just found that most of the things that they were teaching were very traditional marketing. like advertising and direct mail and things that I was just like, no one does this anymore. And this social media thing is blowing up. This was back in like 2008, and thought that this, that, you know, a business program needed to focus on that. Got an internship at a traditional PR firm to work with their like web arm, which was like everyone else in a PR firm was wearing, you know, shirts and ties and writing traditional press releases. And this was like a weird corner of the office with a bunch of nerds wearing t-shirts that would work on like websites and social technology and things like that. So I kind of got an opportunity to experiment with it at a very young age, and ended up helping my school launch our first social media and community program. And that was really exciting. And then my first job out of college was a community manager, because I started blogging about what I was seeing and learning. And a startup read my blog. The startup was called Scribnia at the time. And they hired me as a community manager. They emailed me and they were like, do you want to be our community manager for the summer as our intern? And I was like, holy shit, yeah. You don't even have to pay me. Like, they weren't going to. So,
right.
They ended up paying me for like my apartment in Philly. And I just like went on Craigslist, found an apartment in Philly, and I flew out there right after I graduated, and was just kind of thrown into the world of community building for a business. And it just kind of like grew from there. Frankly, I didn't even want to be a community professional necessarily. I just thought community was really powerful and I was genuinely interested in it, but I really wanted to be like an entrepreneur and a CEO. So I kind of resisted the identity of being, you know, a community professional for a while. Mm-hmm. But people would just organically be like, oh, you want to build community? You got to talk to David. He's a community guy, because I've been like writing about it and I couldn't shut up about it. And and so people just kept calling me the community guy. And I'm like, no, I'm not a community guy. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm building startups. So, you know, worked on a few startups, started a couple companies. One of them was winding down and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do next. And my friend, Max Altshuler, he came to me and said, I guess I had told him about this idea for a conference before for CMX, which, you know, I wanted to do this event for a long time, but I didn't know how to run a conference. Mm-hmm. And didn't know where to get started. He had just run a conference and said, you know, I know how to run it. I know how to do a conference end to end. Now let me handle all the logistics and you handle the marketing and speaker curation and stuff like that, because you know everyone in the space. And I was like, all right, let's try it. And that's how CMX started. Was in 6 weeks, we put together a full conference. We had 300 people come to that first event. All of them were community professionals. And this was like the first event where they truly felt like they were surrounded by their people, and that it was an event that understood them. They didn't have to explain what they did. They could just focus on learning and connecting. And it was this incredible community experience. And I, you know, being the organizer of that and seeing the magic in that room, I was just like, oh shit, this is legit. And like, this is what I'm meant to do. And so that was kind of the aha moment where I went from like, I'm an entrepreneur that builds community on the side kind of thing, or is like, I'm passionate about it on the side, to like, I'm going to align my entrepreneurship and my passion for community. And it truly felt like from that point on, it started feeling like I was swimming downstream, like I was going against the current before. And once I started doing that, it was kind of going with the momentum of what I wanted to do and the way the rest of the world saw me, and they were already calling me the community guy. And so it just kind of grew from there.
Yeah, like I remember when I first stumbled upon CMX, and I think it was at the time where we were putting up the first conference. And I remember having this moment where like, wait a minute, like there's a group of people that do community as a profession. And that's something that you can actually do. I remember that was my first thought, and I immediately became part of the CMX community, right? It was during my time where I was working with Honor Today Experiences with Matt Wilson, who's a friend of ours.
Yeah.
And so thank you for doing that, because you really paved the way for all of us, right, that are in the community space to see that, you know, there is a profession, you know, and that there's a career that you can make out of it.
I was just gonna say, like, that I think that's like the goal for anyone building community for their business is like, Matthew Kobach said this to me recently. He's running marketing for a company called Fast. He's really, really smart about building audiences and community. And then he shared this concept of being a lighthouse so that people who are looking for that or have that identity can kind of find you in the fog, and it gives them a sense of clarity and like something that they're drawn to. And I think that was our goal with CMX is when we started, it wasn't really considered a profession. Most people were kind of feeling very isolated. They were the only person doing it at their company. They didn't know other people who were doing it. And so that was the vision for CMX, is if we can create this lighthouse that when people come into it, they're like, oh shit, this is legit. There is a career path. There are other people who do this work who understand me. That will give them the confidence to continue to pursue that career.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I always admire about you is how consistent you have been with that topic of community, right? And that's something that you rarely see these days, right? Because we're obsessed with instant gratification, right? And quick results, right? But you have consistently stayed like on community, right? And what have been some of the times where, or some of the failures that you have experienced along the way that you started to question, you know, if this was the right path, or where do you have any of those moments throughout your journey in community building?
Definitely. I mean, it's funny. I was just talking about this, how like, I've always kind of been saying the words that I believe community is the future of business. But in the back of my head, it's more of like, I hope it is. So in some ways, it's kind of like manifesting, like, I hope it is, but I'm just going to say it is, and then it will become true. And that seems to be the case. So I'm just going to keep, you know, saying what I hope will happen in this industry. And then apparently it might happen. But I certainly had points where, I would talk. I remember one point I talked to an advisor who literally like sat me down and was like, David, community is never going to have a seat at the table. Like, it's just not going to become a critical part of business. And this was a person who like worked in this space for a long time, tried to do like, you know, similar kind of things as me in terms of like establishing the industry. And he's like, it's just not going to happen. And I remember walking away from that conversation, just feeling like, shit, have I just directed my entire career into this thing that's just never going to happen? And then there was a point where I got fired from like one of the biggest community jobs I ever had. I was working with a company called Zarly. They hired me as a director of community. This was maybe a year and a half after I graduated college. So not long after that company, Scribnia. And so I was like very inexperienced, but had a good reputation. So I was kind of given a whole lot of responsibility very quickly. And I didn't really know how to handle that. And so I just started like building community, like organizing events. And we did incredible work at building community. Like, I feel like I've always been very good at building community. We had like 15 chapters launch. We had a power user program going. We had an online community space. We had like swag going out to everybody. We had this like great program going, but for a lot of reasons that a lot of them were out of my control, but some of them were in my control. It's like, it was like, so what? So people are engaged. How is that adding up into something that's valuable for the business? How is that adding up into something I can measure and report on? And because there wasn't this clear like outcome I was working toward with community, we ended up just doing more for the sake of doing more. Let's do more events. Let's do more engagement. Let's just like add as much as possible. And that's a very easy recipe for completely burning yourself out, because pretty soon I was doing a lot of things yet still being unable to really speak to the value to the business. And I was spread so thin that when like something new came up that the CMO would ask me to work on, I'm like, okay, yeah. And then it just like wouldn't happen. And so like, I just tried to juggle it all. I mean, frankly, like our product just ended up not working either. So building a community for a product that ended up not having product market fit, is very, very difficult, especially because we were already trying to scale it before we had it figured out. And so there were a lot of things like that that were out of my control. But all that to say, like, I ended up getting fired from that job. And that was like the lowest point in my career. Like, it just destroyed my confidence. I remember just feeling completely stunned and like numb. And I just like, I was in the Bay Area and I just walked to the Bay and sat there for 3 hours, just like blankly staring at the water, being like, what just happened? And so you know, it took me a few months to rebuild confidence, and I ended up building, getting a contract job with Le Web and building community with Loic Lemire after that, and helped Udemy launch their community program. And I was like, oh shit, okay, I'm pretty good at this. That was just like a wild, wild scenario. But that was an experience that I'd say really like led to me wanting to write this book, The Business of Belonging. And, you know, even in the title, it's like really understanding the business of building community. You know, why is this something that a business is building? How do you measure it? How do you track it so that other people who are doing this work don't end up in my situation where they just find themselves, you know, spinning their wheels, building as much community as possible without really understanding what the outcome is for the business, what their goal is, what their strategy is, how to put it into a plan, how to track and analyze that plan over time and report on it so that they can continue to get more buy-in, continue to get the resources they need, and be really successful as a professional in this world.
I love that. And I love how he pretty much hit rock bottom. And it, you didn't let that define you though. You know, like you were upset about it, but you realized that, right, this is a learning opportunity, move on, continue doing what you believe, what you're passionate about, right? And I think that's something that all of us can learn from, right? And relate to, right? Because sometimes we might fail big, right? In things that we're trying to do, but that doesn't mean that it's going to define you, right? Like it's all about searching, what's the lesson here, right? And now that we're, just to shift gears here a little bit, now that we're talking about challenges and frustrations, I read the 2021 Community Industry Report, right? And I know that the top three challenges for community professionals are that it's hard to quantify the value of the community, right? Or some of the processes that they have are very manual, right? Or keeping the community engaged, right? That's very challenging, right? And I know that in the book, right, you go in depth into these topics, but what are some of the recommendations that you can give us here in the podcast about how to tackle some of these challenges?
So each one of those is a massive challenge that you know, we could probably spend a whole podcast talking about. Consistently the top three challenges that community professionals face are proving the value of their work, driving community engagement, and scaling or automating things that take a lot of time, like very manual tasks. So you know, on the business side of really understanding the value, for that, it's really important to start with the goal in mind. Don't just start building community without understanding what is the outcome you're trying to drive for the business, and get really clear on what that outcome is, because otherwise you'll end up trying to achieve too many different objectives with community is what often happens. Like, you launch community and then you're like trying to grow the company by doing ambassador programs. You're trying to, you know, create support channels for customers to talk to each other. You're trying to collect product feedback. You're just like juggling all these different objectives. It's going to be really hard to measure. It's going to be really hard to have a concise story about how you impacted the business. And so start with a focused objective. And there's six outcomes that you can drive with community, that businesses drive with community. We use a spaces model to break that down. So easy to remember, spaces. So it stands for support, product, acquisition, contribution, engagement, and success. All right, so it's support, product, acquisition, contribution, engagement, and success. And to just go through it quickly, support is your traditional support form, right? So you're building a community to decrease your support costs and help customers answer questions for each other. On the product side, it's where you're trying to like innovate and collect feedback and insights and ideas that help you improve your product. It might be like a big community where people can share their ideas and vote on them and comment on them, and you crowdsource ideas for your product. Or it could be something really simple, like a community council that companies like Reddit and Lyft, and it's a very popular kind of program now to get even just 10 people who are representative of your community of customers and bring them into decisions for your product and for your business and have the voice of the customer be involved. Acquisition is all about driving growth. So you build a community that is bringing new customers in. Maybe you're running event programs that reach, you know, that drive leads or new prospects. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have an online community that you drive people to before they become a customer, right? Like HubSpot's inbound community that they're running for many years. It's like become an inbound marketer and then maybe you'll become a HubSpot customer. It could be ambassador programs. So any community program that's driving growth. A contribution is when you have a platform business. So think of like Airbnb, mm-hmm. Lyft, Etsy, anything where it's like buyers and sellers, or anywhere where the user is creating the product, the content on the product. It could be Wikipedia, it could be social networks. And so your goal is to create a community of those contributors to make them successful at contributing to your platform. So for Airbnb, it's their Superhost program. For Udemy, it's their instructor community program. It could be any DevRel community or anything in like crypto is basically a contributor community program as well, because you need people to be investing in and building on the platform for it to work. So like Google developer groups is a really good example of that. They want developers to be successful and engaged at building on the Android platform. So they have 1,000 local chapters around the world for their community to engage and connect with each other. E is for engagement, which is essentially customer retention. So mm-hmm. by engaging people through community, you're increasing loyalty, increasing customer lifetime value, increasing contract spend. And then finally is success, where you're driving, helping your customers become more successful using your product or be more successful in their career by helping them teach each other. So like the Salesforce Trailblazer community program is a really great example of that, where they have, thousands of chapters around the world, and it's empowers Salesforce admins to teach each other how to be more successful at using the tool and how to grow in their career. All right. So that's the Spaces model: support, product, acquisition, contribution, engagement, and success. I'll pause there because we can go into much deeper stuff for that engagement question and the automating manual processes question. But I think that really understanding the business objective first is like the key first step.
Yeah, that's a great start, right? And essentially, you would pick one of the goals, right, from the Spaces model. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. My tip's always to whenever I teach this in a workshop, people end up like I ask them how many people are doing or how many of these objectives are you trying to drive, and it's always like 3, 4, 5, sometimes all 6. And so I say that, every one of those programs is going to have a different set of objectives. And in the book, I share specific metrics you can track ROI of each kind of program. Mm-hmm. But each one's going to be different.
Right.
Each one might also require different tools and technology, because you're not going to use the same tool for an ambassador program that you're going to use mm-hmm. for a support forum, mm-hmm. right? Each one will actually have different members who want to participate, because your members who want to be ambassadors aren't necessarily the same people who want to contribute to a support forum or give you product feedback. They require a different strategy. They have different timelines. Mm-hmm. And so if you're taking on more than one objective, everyone you're taking on is essentially like being an entire additional team with a new set of tools, right. metrics, expectations. And within your organization, that also means you're going to have to work with the marketing team and the product team and the success team. So especially if you're a solo person, the solo community manager, which is often the case, you're going to be spread very thin. And then at the end of the quarter, the end of the year, when your boss is like, great, like what were the results of the community? And you just have this kind of like loose smattering of metrics and impact. That's not going to be a very concise, compelling story to say like, this is how we drove growth for our business. Mm-hmm. So do what Erica Kuhl did when she built the Salesforce program up over 13 years. She started with one area. She started with marketing because she knew that was where she can track it. It was really important to the business and members were motivated to participate. So she started with that. And once she had that program working and she could prove that value, then she expanded to things like product, support, success, and so on. And now it's, all 6 across all of Salesforce.
Yeah. Erica is someone that I also admire, right? Especially because she built the community program for Salesforce from the ground up, right? And yeah. It takes a lot of grit, a lot of resiliency to constantly, you know, try to convince people that, hey, this is important.
She is as gritty as it gets.
Yeah, awesome. Exactly. Now, one question I want to ask you, what is one of the common misconceptions people have about building community, right? What is one of the things that you hear out there that people have that's just a misconception?
There's so many.
one of your favorites.
One is that like you can just have it be a part of someone's job, like give it to the support person to spend 50% of their time on community. No, you need at least a full-time dedicated person. Mm-hmm. Most likely you need a full team if you're really trying to do it at scale. No, you can't hand it to the intern either. They're, you know, they might have some good engagement in your Facebook group, but you're not going to actually have a clear strategy in place that you can measure and tie back to business objectives. Two is like, they start too big. So, you know, especially if you already have a customer base of like 1,000 customers and you want to launch a community program, they want to launch it to all 1,000 customers. Actually, just today, someone DM me and they're like, my boss wants to launch a community to all 5,000 of our customers. What do you think about that? You know, do you think we should do that or start smaller? And it's like, always start smaller, because small is a superpower. It allows you to be very focused. It allows you to do things that don't scale. So you can like literally get on the phone with every member in the early days and talk to them and build a relationship. You can personally welcome every person. You can make them feel very special because you've curated this community with the right people. So now they know they've been selected and they know everyone else in there has been selected. So they're much more likely to want to participate. And what it does is it gives you an opportunity to create a foundation of community. So like the culture, the standard of quality for posts and responses, the tone and voice and vibe in your community, you can create that all much more easily when it's, you know, 10 to maybe the first 100 people. If you had 1,000 people or 5,000 people, you miss that opportunity and it drowns people out. Like, they, you know, they won't feel validated when they come into the community because, you know, no one's going to respond to them because they're introducing themselves alongside, you know, 5,000 other people. And that's a really critical part of building community is validation. We talk about the social identity cycle in the book, and that's the third stage is validation, making sure that when someone does take that step of participating, that they feel welcome, they feel included, they feel validated for that participation. So I think those are two very big misconceptions that we often see businesses have.
Yeah, and I think the second one you mentioned, it is so underrated, but the fact that in the early stages of building community, you can get on the phone or on a Zoom call and have a conversation with that early member, build a relationship. It's often overlooked as one of the most effective strategies that you can implement, right? Because it takes too much time or it's not scalable, but it is so important to do that from the early stages. Like I have experienced that myself, right? Being in an early stage startup, we did that basically, right? We built relationships with the early members and—
You have to in the early days.
It grew the community from 50 to 4,000 members by the time I left, right?
Yeah. So
it's just part of it, right? So
yeah.
One thing that you mentioned, product and community, right? And I feel like this is gonna be like a chicken or the egg kind of question, but what should come first? Should you have a product first, or should it be a community first? What would you recommend there?
I think you're always going to have a community. It's just the form of that community is going to change. So in the early days, like pre-product market fit, you're going to be building this community of early adopters who are going to give you feedback, get on the phone with you, use the product, even though it's really shitty. Like you have to have that early community of people to build your product with. Otherwise, you're going to be building, you know, blindly for nobody. So in the very early days, it's a, you know, it's like an early adopter community. You know, should you launch a customer forum before you have product market fit? No, definitely not. Like you should wait till you have customers who need a product forum before you launch that forum. but you're absolutely going to be building that foundation of community. And then once you have product market fit, then it's like, okay, great. Like, how do we build our community of our first 10 customers or our first 3 customers, right? Just getting the first one is the hardest part. Yeah. And so now you start to grow it and it starts to take a different form. And then your customer base grows or your user base grows and they have different needs. And now they have lots of questions. And maybe now you have ambassadors. So now you create an ambassador program. But yeah, you shouldn't launch an ambassador program when no one cares about your business. No one gives a shit about your product yet. No one's going to evangelize it organically, no matter how much you incentivize them. So you're always going to be building community from the very early days of building your business and product. You just, as your product and your business evolves, your community needs to evolve with it.
I like that. Yeah, that makes so much sense, right? There's always going to be a community, right? And it's going to shift as the business grows, right? Now with, let's say I'm putting together a community team, right? I'm convinced that community is, you know, one of the best things I can do for my business, right? What would you recommend to someone on the hiring side, you know, when putting together a job description, right, and recruiting? Because I've seen some job descriptions out there, and you could tell that they're trying to combine like 3 roles into one, right?
Totally.
Or like, I don't know, some stuff. So what would you recommend to people in charge of recruiting, you know, community professionals, right?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And look, like, that's okay if you're a very early stage startup and it's like, yeah, we have like one technical lead. we have, you know, one support person and you just have like, you need one person to do social media, marketing and community because you're just like 3 people at the company. Like, okay, fine. I would recommend articulating that you're aware that these should be multiple roles, but you're early stage. So I would actually write in there, like, this person will be responsible for marketing, social media, and community. We're still a very early stage company. And so you have an opportunity to kind of touch multiple different roles and departments. Over time, we will, you know, create more specialty departments around it. I think being really clear about your values is really important for attracting great community talent because community builders always care about working for a values-driven company. So speaking to your culture, speaking to your values and why you care about community, like what makes community an authentic investment for you? Because like a lot oftentimes just like, we love our community and that's all they say without saying like, this is why we believe this is really critical to our business and our culture and the impact we're trying to have, and speak to like, this is the objective or the objectives we think we want to drive. Or if you don't know that, say like, we want this person to come in and help us really define the objectives and metrics. But you know, here are the things that we believe we need right now. So just kind of like making it clear to that community professional that, you know, you have an idea of what you're looking for. You know what community is and what outcomes you're expecting of it. Also making it clear what resources you're going to provide to them is really exciting for a community professional to see because they're so used to just being on an island and being siloed. So if you're like, this person, you know, we will provide this person with development resources, data science resources, a budget, you know, you'll be working with a great team. Like that, if I'm a community professional, I read that, I'm like, oh shit, yes, sign me up for that. So yeah, kind of like speaking the community professional's language and making it clear that, you know, it's kind of like accounting for their fears, because any experienced community professional has a fear of joining a company and the company actually has no idea what community is. And like, they're not actually bought into it. They just like wanted the name on their marketing and PR. Or they don't get the resources that they need, or they don't have access to other teams and leadership within the company that they need to be successful. So just kind of like addressing the concerns that community professionals often have upfront will make it really compelling.
Yeah, no, that's a good one, right? And you can always ask during the interview process as well, right? Like if they don't put all of this stuff in the job description, it's important to know, right? Like what you can count with as far as resources and what the vision is, right, for the community role itself.
Exactly. Yeah, and you'll have conversations with them, and you don't have to have all the answers, mm-hmm. but I would like be honest about what you don't know and say like, yeah, this is why we want someone with experience doing this to help us define it and shape it. You can even say like, we'll have discussions through your interview process about like what those expectations are and what mm-hmm. we want to focus on. And yeah, and then when you're interviewing, just like, look for people who can show data behind the work that they've done in the past, because that's often a really good marker of a community professional that can be metrics driven and understands the business angle of building community. Look for people with a lot of empathy and examples of them, helping people without being asked to or without mm-hmm. expecting anything in return. And just think about, are you looking for a community professional who's more operational, who's mm-hmm. going to be really good at like setting up systems and tools and kind of being behind the scenes, running the programs, can connect, community data back to customer data, scale up processes that are very manual, things like that. Or do you want someone who's going to be very good at like being active in the community mm-hmm. and sparking conversations and bring a lot of positive high energy? And just have like a very natural passion for the topic. There are people who can do both. It's a little bit more rare. I think that's a little bit of a unicorn. Generally, people will be very good at one or very good at the other.
Yeah, no, I agree. I would fall under the face of the community type of role, because data analytics, it's something that I would dive into, but definitely not my forte. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm default definitely like just engagement. I love being like in the community, talking to people, throwing out hugs before coronavirus.
Exactly.
But like I've intentionally made a big investment in becoming a better operator over mm-hmm. time. And now I lead a full team and we work together to put together like our systems for planning and tracking mm-hmm. and measuring and reporting. And like I said, it's something, because it didn't come naturally to me, I had to learn it the hard way and come up with a lot of really clear systems that I can come back to. And that's exactly what's in the book. It's like a very methodical end-to-end approach to developing your community strategy and setting up a system like this, so that you aren't just building community for the sake of it. You are actually able to have an organized operation mm-hmm. that's tying it back to business goals and impact.
What are some of the, I guess, some of the trends that you're excited about in a post-pandemic world, right? As it relates to community, right? It could be, what's in your mind?
Yeah, well, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with events. I think people are drastically underestimating how quickly big events will come back. Mm-hmm. I think all it will take is like, Burning Man to go off without a hitch, and then everyone else is going to be like, oh, cool, we can do these again. And everyone's craving gatherings so much that like, if they're vaccinated, they're going to be like, yeah, cool, I'm good. Mm-hmm. So I think big events are going to come back quickly. I think meetups are going to come back very quickly, like smaller meetups and gatherings. I think that will be the first thing to really blow up, is like, there's going to be a huge resurgence of local events. Because I think people will still be a little skeptical of traveling, and they've like developed new lifestyles and routines that are pretty much just staying in their homes and their apartments and working remotely. So getting them to fly across the world, I think, will be harder. Getting them to like come to a location nearby for a smaller event meetup on a local level, I think people are going to do a ton of those. So we're going to see those blow up. On the virtual side, I think that virtual events are here to stay. And we have a lot of data on that in the community industry report, that it's like become a pretty critical part of a lot of companies' strategy. We've seen the value of virtual events now in mm-hmm. that they are a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
You can scale them up a lot faster. You can reach a lot more people. You can run them more often. It's an easier commitment to get speakers on board. So there's a lot of benefits. but we also have seen the limitations. Like, it just doesn't do what in-person does. Sponsorships aren't the same. Engagement in the event isn't the same. For a sales team or B2B company that's running conferences, like, you don't get in the room with prospects and get to have a conversation or have a beer with them. Like, you have to hope they come to your virtual booth and then follow up over email. It's a lot less efficient. Mm-hmm. So I think virtual events are here to stay, and it will become much more of a hybrid program where you're running both virtual and in-person events pretty regularly. What I don't think will happen, that a lot of people are saying is going to happen, is an actual hybrid event where you have people in person and online at an event simultaneously. There's a lot of people talking about that. I don't think they realize how hard it is in practice. And I know because I ran community for Le Web, which was essentially run as a hybrid event. We had like over 5,000 people in person, and we had thousands of people tune in online on the live stream. And I was managing the online community from the event.
Wow.
We were doing live interviews with speakers. We had like programming going all day. We were engaging people. But it's really hard. The people online are going to feel excluded. The people in person are not going to be participating in the online space, or it'll feel very noisy because they won't know who's actually there, who's not. It's very expensive to live stream from a physical space in a very high quality way. It's like tens of thousands of dollars. And you have to have the live streaming software, and you have to pay for the Wi-Fi at the venue that costs tens of thousands of dollars. So there's all these like details that, like, in theory, it sounds nice. Of people being in person and then having this online component where people are also participating. In practice, I think it's going to be much more of either or. Either it's an in-person event or it's an online event.
I would have to agree with you on that one. Like, I personally cannot wait to go to a conference in person, but I don't think I would want to do like a simultaneously, in-person and virtual type of event. I don't think, because I would feel so overwhelmed, right? Like, where do I even start, right? But yeah, no, I'm the same. Like, I can't wait. Like, as soon as I'm vaccinated, as soon as it's safe,
same. I can't wait
to fly over to you and give you a hug, right?
That's right. CMX Summit 2022, probably. I think this year our plan this year is we're planning on a virtual event. And if we can add in-person components, we will add it as we get closer to the event, but it's going to be like default virtual, and we might have some in-person components. So after I said all that, like, we are actually probably going to do a hybrid event. But we're also unique because like Bevy is literally a platform built for virtual events and in-person events. And so we can run our own programs and we'll see what happens. We'll see what like next year looks like and what kind of experience we actually want to create.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And David, just to bring it home, what is one book that has had a profound influence on you that you would recommend to others? Besides your book, of course.
My book didn't impact me. It impacted my time. I've lost a lot of time. On the community side or just general?
Just in general. I mean, it could be about community, but it could be about life, philosophy. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. There's been a lot. I would say, there's a lot of books that have had a huge impact on me and just kind of focusing on mindfulness and your ability to control your thoughts and emotions. So I read a lot in Buddhism and Stoicism. And one of my favorite books is actually called Man's Search for Meaning.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a great one. And it's, a therapist who was in the Holocaust and went through the travesties of the Holocaust and shares his experience and like all the awful things, but then also shares his philosophy about how to find meaning in life and how even in like the most awful, awful, dehumanizing circumstances, you can still control how you respond to those circumstances. And it's your choice if you want it to be something that destroys you or who you want to be in those situations. And so whenever I find myself feeling overwhelmed or stressed, on one hand, it's like, well, I'm not in the Holocaust, so I have nothing to complain about. But on the other end, it's like, it's my choice. I can choose how to respond to the situation. I can choose my attitude. And it's, I always come back to that book in a way that it helps me kind of like reframe my mentality in the moment.
In my mind right now, I'm tying this book back to the beginning of our episode when you share your rock bottom moment on, you know, when you felt like frustrated. So I think you decided how you were going to respond, right? Like to that failure.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could say that I was like, you know, right back up on my feet, but you know, it took me a few months of being pretty depressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not responding to it very well. So, you know, be gentle with yourself. If you're still feeling sad and depressed, like just be aware of that and know it. And you know, hopefully over time you develop tools like that tool I've gained from that book of, you know, maybe if I really internalized the book in that time, maybe it would have only been a month and then I would have been able to get back on my feet, or maybe right away I would have been like, oh, cool, this is a learning opportunity. Great, I'll keep learning and move on. But no matter what, it's a tool that you always have available to you, whether or not you are able to apply it in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to wrap it up, David, in your own words, what does being a community professional mean to you?
I mean, for me, it's what's always excited me about it is it's this like really fun combination of getting to work on really exciting things and projects and be really ambitious and challenge yourself to like grow a business and have, you know, a really big impact on people's lives by creating value on that way, while still doing it with a focus on the humans that are part of the company, the humans that are consuming the product, the humans that are investing in it. Because at the end of the day, a business is just a community. It's just a group of people. And you get to really connect with those people and see the value that comes out of connecting them with each other. And those are the most magical moments in my career, are when I see a connection happen between people or amongst a group of people that has a real impact for them. Or if someone comes back to me 5 years later after coming to a CMX summit and they say, you know, I met a person there that led me to this job and that set off my whole career. Like it's those like points of connection that spark something in someone's life that for me is much more rewarding than any, you know, fundraise round or customer close or, you know, a lot of the things we celebrate in the world of business. It's like those points of really meaningful connection is what really always just keeps me coming back every day.
I love that. And I resonate with that so much because that's what I'm all about as well. You know, connections and the impact that those connections can have. Well, David, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast and talk about community, your personal story, and hopefully we can get to have many more episodes and we can dive deeper into other topics around community and business. But for now, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, I really appreciate you having me. You're doing amazing work too, man. You're a true community builder since those early days. I remember Under 30 Experiences days, Under 30 Pro. Those are some different days, man. Thanks so much for having me. I'm at David Spinks on Twitter. I tweet a lot, as Cesar knows. I tweet a lot about community and business, so you can find me there. And yeah, the book's The Business of Belonging. Hope you all enjoy it. Purchases and Amazon reviews help authors a whole lot in the first couple months. So if you like it, drop me a review if you can. If you don't like it, just use it as like firewood or something.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.